From Harry Hurley Way in the World's Playground to the broadcast pioneers of Philadelphia Hall of Fame.
I want to congratulate my friend, Harry Hurley.
You're about to find out why Harry Hurley has been named to the Talkers Magazine list of the 100 most important talk show hosts in the nation. Live from the studios of Town Square Media in Northfield, it's Hurley in the Morning on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
It is 7 minutes past the hour. Thanks for waking up early in the morning. We begin with a topic that I am in disbelief that I could even bring this up and that it could possibly be the current situation. The President of the United States is expected to meet with NATO leaders on Russia, Ukraine on March 23rd. March 23rd. They're getting bombed to medieval times. This is 8 days away. Are you kidding? I'll tell you, I miss it beyond words. I liked it when I was working for him. I loved the fast pace that we kept. I loved the sense of urgency that we always had. And we were always about getting things done and not putting things off. How in the world can these leaders be waiting 8 days to meet? First of all, you can meet by video chat, secure video chat. You don't have to go to Brussels. You don't have to go somewhere and gather. They're actually governing like it's 50 years ago. But then again, I think that's Biden's most in focus, clear thoughts, because I believe there's something wrong with him. And I believe that when you have the type of mental acuity that he appears to have, your long-term memory is better than your short-term memory. This is why this guy doesn't know. The guy next to me, the general right here. Can't remember anybody's name. So he's just going to say, hey, you know, the thing. These are beyond scary times. So I don't know how you process information. Here's how I process information. I look at an item and usually something grabs me instantly. So when I see President Joe Biden is expected to travel to Brussels next week to meet with NATO leaders to discuss Russia's war in Ukraine. If I'm not mistaken, and this data is about 3 hours and 9 minutes old, at about 3 o'clock this morning, I reacquainted myself. I believe this is accurate, but I've been nonstop for the last 3+ hours. So forgive me if I'm slightly off, but I believe that the Russian military is within about 7 miles of Kyiv. They're right there. They're bombing like crazy. They're killing men, indiscriminately men, women, children, babies. I mean, this is monstrous. Medieval, what's happening. And I'll tell you, somewhere, somehow, someone's got to show some leadership. And Putin has to be charged as a war criminal. I mean, this has to be done. So I read about 500 words on this Biden-NATO meeting. But my only takeaway is, how can you wait 8 days? I don't even care about this meeting in 8 days. Kyiv and other key areas may fall by then. Before then, I think it's just terrible. And it's a lack of leadership that from the beginning, I've been consistent on this. I said this will become a problem at some point. You cannot wallpaper over this level of incompetency. I mean, just slow. Someone the other day, it was an analyst on Fox News. They were spot on. They said he's just, meaning Biden, he's just too slow regarding everything. And let me tell you another thing I'm sick of hearing. I'm sick of hearing Joe Biden and Jen Psaki talk about Putin's price increase, Putin's recession, Putin's inflation, and all this. Nobody's buying it. Your peanut gallery, they don't believe it either. They're just willing to parrot the lies with you. And another thing that I am absolutely sick of, and they're really working this, the echo chamber is really working this one hard. They keep talking about the Putin wing of the Republican Party. Because once again, and it was inarticulate and it was wrong, once again, Donald Trump gets in the way of his own story that could be very, very good, and said something quasi-complimentary about Vladimir Putin. But it really was only that he's a decisive individual, and we have Weekend at Bernie's. And there's string on the arms and sunglasses he's wearing. I mean, it's true. It's Izzy Mandelbaum. And when it's not Izzy Mandelbaum, it's Weekend at Bernie's. Right down to the glasses. And the bad hair. Very bad hair, as a matter of fact. But if I hear this Putin wing of the Republican Party, and then you even have Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney, they're doing it. There's no Putin wing of the Republican Party. It's not Donald Trump. It's not Tucker Carlson. It's not any elected members. It's not Tulsi Gabbard. I'm still trying to figure out how she got tagged by Mitt Romney as somehow being pro-Putin. She merely talked about the fact that there are these biological weapon labs in Ukraine. This is confirmed. This is confirmed by Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary under Biden. This is confirmed that they exist. Is there something wrong with saying that? Is there something wrong with saying they should have been secured before the war began? How are they getting away with these lies? And in fact, are they getting away with these lies? I'm not sure. I don't believe that most Americans just figured out that gas prices were going up when they had gone up over a dollar something over the first full year of the Biden presidency. None of this, all of it, predates Putin and his illegal invasion, full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But I'll tell you what, you better start working overtime on countering these lies. Because I don't know who believes what anymore. I mean, for four years they floated Trump-Russia collusion when it was actually Hillary and the Democrats colluding. This is, I'm telling you, this is, and I'm going to work very hard tomorrow. I am guest hosting the Todd Starnes Show. So, you know, every chance I get when I get to go on the national stage, I don't waste a second of it. My goals are very, very simple. I want to honor the host that I'm filling in for, do no damage to their program, and work very, very hard to get the truth out to as many people as I possibly can. That's been my goal from the day I became a broadcaster. I wanted to debunk myths and lies, expose bad actors, praise good ones, do a lot of good charity work. And then over the past 3+ years that we've been blessed to do a lot of national fill-in work to get the truth out to as many people as we can. And see, that's incumbent upon all of us on your own social media pages. We've got to counter this Putin wing of the Republican Party. I am tired of them calling us racists and always labeling us with some lie. And they're the ones that are not pro-American. I forget the outfit, but it's a major outfit we'll talk about this after the break, that if we were attacked like Ukraine, 52% of Democrats said they would flee the country and not defend their country. So when we tell you that they hate America, they don't love their country. They don't. They take advantage of the greatness of this country, but they don't love it. Now, that's not all, but I always knew it was a majority. We'll talk more about that next on the Hurley in the Morning program. As you can see, I'm fired up.
Fox News commentary.
I'm Jimmy Fallon, and I'll tell you why Tom Brady's going to overtime next.
After 9/11, Saul Martinez couldn't wait to enlist. In Iraq, his vehicle was hit by a projectile improvised explosive device. Saul survived, but he lost both legs, suffered a traumatic brain injury, and lost two close friends. Saul now lives in a smart home from the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, which gave him back his independence despite his severe physical challenges. Help heroes like Saul. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org.
So Tom Brady announced that he's unretiring just 6 weeks after calling it quits. You know inflation's bad when not even a seven-time Super Bowl champion can afford to live on a fixed income. But to put it in football terms, Brady's already had one career that was incredible, so I think he was right to go for two. The guy clearly loves playing. And even after 22 years, the high of leading a game-winning drive has got to be way cooler than driving your kids to school. I mean, no offense to the family. When was the last time somebody threw you a ticker tape parade for making it to homeroom on time? The point being, Brady realizes we all get one season on this earth, and you're supposed to spend it running as many of your favorite plays as possible. Because when the clock runs out, you're not going to wish you spent a few more hours sitting on the sideline watching the game of life pass you by. You're going to wish you were out on the field trying to score in more ways than one. So my advice to you is the next time you're thinking about punting in life, I'd go for it instead. I'm Jimmy.
Set the first button on your car radio for South Jersey's talk station, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
I thank you sincerely for waking up early in the morning. Thanks for being here. 23 minutes past the hour. So take this or leave it. Quinnipiac University, which is a very Democrat operation, I've never seen polling from them that ever, ever helps Republicans. So these numbers, in my opinion, are worse. The let's put it this way. Let me try to get my mind is thinking faster than my mouth is speaking the words. The numbers I'm about to share with you are the truth, in my estimation, is even worse than what I'm going to share. But I'm not going. I can't prove that. So I'll merely share with you what the results of a recent Quinnipiac University poll. I've been meaning to share this with you since yesterday, all morning long, and just ran out of time. Quinnipiac University, very Democrat operation, surveyed the following. If Americans were in the same position as Ukrainians right now, basically, what would you do? Republicans surveyed, 68% said they would stay in their country and fight. 40% of Democrats said that they would stay and fight. Among Democrats, 52% said they would flee the country. Cowards. 25% of Republicans said they would flee the country. Now, you're not surprised at any of this. If I put this question just out there, you'd get the right answer. I mean, we might be off on the percentage because it's a tough thing to guesstimate, but isn't that quite amazing? So when you take the Republicans and the independents and the minority of Democrats who would stay and fight, 55% of Americans would stay and fight. How about that? But the number is low. It's a majority, but it's low because Democrats, once again, infect our country and infect the sampling. Quote, when confronted with a terrible hypothetical that would put them in the shoes of the Ukrainians, Americans say they would stand and fight rather than seek safety in another country, Quinnipiac University polling analyst Tim Malloy said. Yeah, well, I don't know about that. That's a nice way of you saying that, but not the Democrats. They've got their shoes laced up. They're ready to bolt. They also polled in here agreement in terms of accepting Ukrainian refugees. 66% of Republicans agreed that we should accept Ukrainian refugees. 91% of Democrats agreed. And that out of the 91% of Democrats, what, 40-some percent of them would be fleeing the country while saying, but we'll take you. Goodbye. Bye. They're so hypocritical. They're awful. Awful. There's such a crisis. I mean, it's getting near 2 million refugees have left Ukraine. And you've got the president of the United States. Hey, yeah, March 23rd. What's today? Today's the 15th, Joe. Yeah, March 23rd, I'm going to talk about this. 8 days from now. You couldn't make this stuff up if you tried. And Quinnipiac University also brought up the Adolf Hitler. You know my theory on that. Anytime you bring up Hitler, you lose. But this is one occasion where I think I'll suspend the Hurley Doctrine, because what Putin is doing really brings about comparisons. When asked if Putin's actions against Ukraine were comparable to Adolf Hitler's actions against Austria and Czechoslovakia before the outbreak of World War II, half of Americans surveyed agreed. Now, listen to this. This shows you how Ukraine just getting just the short end of the stick at every turn. If Putin decides to go beyond Ukraine and attack a NATO country, 79% approved a United States military response, including 82% of Republicans and 88% of Democrats. How about that? How about that one? According to the poll, 83% of Republicans and 91% of Democrats don't believe the Russian people have a say in what Putin and his government choose to do. I don't know how that number isn't even higher. They have no say. I mean, 17% of Republicans are not clear on that. And 9% of Democrats, I don't even know what to say about that. Of those surveyed, 74% also feel that the Russian people don't have a full understanding of what is happening in Ukraine. Now, I totally agree with that, because the Russian military doesn't even have an understanding. They were sent there and it said, what, you want us to shoot? You want us to shoot Ukrainians? We don't want to shoot Ukrainians. They didn't know what they were there for. How would the people know? Quote, Russians are largely in the dark about and unable to halt the destruction being wrought by Putin, say Americans who see the Russian leader as mentally unstable. And half of Americans liken Putin to modern history's darkest villain, Adolf Hitler, added Malloy. Nearly half of Americans, 49%, also say the attack on Ukraine has contributed to them feeling anxious, according to the poll. When asked how long they expect the war in Ukraine to last, 19% of those surveyed believe it will be over in weeks, 44% feel it will end in months, and 23% believe it will last years. 30 minutes past the hour, I found that very interesting, illuminating even. And I submit to you that the numbers are even worse for Democrats than what I just shared with you. I know it.
This is the Town Square, New Jersey Info and Weather Network.
This is Harry Hurley with three stories that you can follow on our WPG Talk Radio app. I tell you the reason, finally, it took me 24 days, and it's bogus as hell, the reason why Stockton University was booted from the Atlantic City Boathouse. Don Purdy is challenging Keith Davis for Atlantic County Republican Party chairman, and John Devlin has filed a $10 million tort claims notice versus the state, City of Atlantic City, Marty Small, and many others.
From the Town Square, New Jersey Info and Weather Network, I'm Chief Meteorologist Dan Zarrow. No reason to beware this Ides of March forecast. Weather looks great today with spring-like warmth across South Jersey. We'll alternate periods of sunshine and fair weather clouds. High temperature reaching for 64, more than 10 degrees above normal for the middle of March. Clear and quiet tonight, low of 45. Mostly sunny and mild tomorrow, high of 60, although much cooler right along the coast. Get weather 24/7 wherever you are. Download our free mobile app today.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Hi, it's Mark Levin. Join me this evening at 6. Now back to Harry Hurley on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, thank you. Great one. During the break, I always check my messages, whether it's through Facebook, text messages, email. I mean, there's so many ways to get a hold of us. So I see this one that just jumped out on me, and I want to help promote this. Stockton University, and this is from someone that's on the board for Stockton Rowing. And please go see the story that I wrote this morning. I worked very hard on it, and it took me 24 days to get the proof. They're not doing a single rowing event at the boathouse. I mean, whoever heard of such a thing? It's a damn boathouse. They're not doing a single rowing event at the boathouse. March, April, May, and June. When they figure out that I've just exposed them, they'll just start filling in dates on their bogus calendar. These are some of the most rotten people that have power. Little power. Just a little bit. Maybe it's got to be me. Somebody's got to get to Governor Murphy and blow the whistle on this syndicate. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. But let me get back to something positive. There is an event on March 25th at the Stockton University Atlantic City campus honoring Sue Peterson and Dr. John Holland, who I knew very, very well. What a beautiful man he was. What a good man. So if you can support it, I hope you will. We are going to support it. I've just decided. And I'll reach out to President Kesselman and work that out. But to Joelle, who wrote me, thank you and keep in touch. And we do have the flyer now. So this is fantastic. It'll be at the John Scarpa Academic Center at the Stockton University Atlantic City campus in the Fannie Lou Hamer event room. Incidentally, I recorded it. I haven't had a chance to watch it. There was an amazing national program, and they do different important historical people from across, you know, history. And Margie told me about it, so I hit the record on it. And I got to watch it. It's basically, I believe it's the Fannie Lou Hamer story. So I'm excited about that. So if you have the opportunity to help, they're going to have a lot of neat things. They're going to raise funds, of course, for the rowing program. And they need your help now more than ever because they've had to make a whole transition with very little advance notice from Atlantic City over to Brigantine. Thankfully, when you read my piece, you will see there's a lot of phenomenal people from Mayor Serra to the Brigantine Rowing Club and a whole bunch of good people, Dr. Phil Gunther, that really stepped up. And because think about it, I mean, Stockton wouldn't have had a home. This I'm telling you, this is an elite rowing program. And the fact that Atlantic City did a typical Atlantic City, they want the boathouse for them. It's so bad. It's just so rotten. But it's good, though, because the fact that they have gone so extreme, if they were just a little bit politically corrupt. It would be in the eye of the beholder. It is so self-evident how awful this disgusting regime is. I'm mad at myself because there was a duping that went on here when they were on a short leash and had to run and run and run and run and run every year for a period of years. It was one thing. It was contained. 4-year term is achieved, and look at the script get flipped. I mean, it's stunning what's been going on. But I couldn't help but note, I looked at March, I looked at April, I looked at May, I looked at June. And look, I'm a fan of Omega Sci-Fi, the fraternity, some very upstanding, great men. Mayor Langford, a lot of great people. But I don't think that really is the best use for a boathouse, is for it to be a frat house. And that's what people are calling it. Not a single rowing event on the schedule. You'll watch what they do. Look, it took 24 days for them to manufacture this schedule. I've been asking a Board of Education member for 24 days because I wanted to find out what would be a legitimate reason for having Richard Stockton, let me get the correct name. It used to be Richard Stockton College, Stockton University. What would be the legitimate reason? 3 years, your working partner, they worked incredibly well with the high school crew team, with the city. They made leasehold improvements. They bought countless ergometers. They bought boats. They did all kinds of leasehold improvements. I mean, just, you can't ask. I mean, because look, full disclosure, Dr. Harvey Kesselman is a very good friend, but I don't lie. Stockton University is a good citizen. They're, in this case, a good tenant. The shame of it is, governors past and present should have compelled the trade of the Carnegie Library for the boathouse. Because as much as Stockton uses the Carnegie Library, and they do, for very, very good purposes, they really could have used that boathouse. Atlantic City really doesn't need it like Stockton needs it. And Stockton would have made it available for the high school, unlike what the city has done in reverse. And then the city of Atlantic City, the Board of Education side of local purpose tax, wouldn't be shelling out the rent that they do every month. Understand something. Everything that goes on, they do on purpose. They want to pay that rent. I don't have time to get into why, but just trust me. They want to pay that rent. You need me on that wall. You want me on that wall. Trust me on this. I don't lie to you. They lie. Took them 24 days to conjure up a schedule for the boathouse. Read all about it on the app and at WPGTalkRadio.com. It's disgusting. It's disgraceful. It's a public embarrassment. But this is their priorities. Look at the schedule. I posted it. Not one rowing event. Was that 4 months? March, April, May, June, 4 months. Not one rowing event. And you send Stockton University, which has invested $240 million into Atlantic City, you send them to Brigantine. Well, you didn't send them anywhere. You kicked them out not even knowing they had a place to go. Who does that? Boy, I'll tell you, thank God. Thank God. The state of New Jersey, even with a Democrat. Remember, Governor Murphy, they all campaigned. Sheila Oliver, oh yeah, Atlantic City, you're going to run yourself. You're not going to, you know, this is terrible what Chris Christie did. Yeah, the Democrats have taken a much more aggressive firm hold of a total takeover than Governor Christie did. and they trashed him, but they have nothing to say here because they're hypocrites and liars and, for the most part, losers as well. Well, I'll tell you, you wonder how. Thank God for the casinos and thank God for the business and industry that, despite such an incompetent, ignorant administration, thank God, in spite of them, with the state running things and them having very little say except for things like this. And I don't know why the state has the veto of the minutes. I'm going to definitely reach out to Governor Murphy and say, why do you let this happen? Veto these damn minutes. How do you let them throw Stockton out of Atlantic City? How do you let that happen? DCA, shame on you. Because in fairness to Governor Murphy, he's got a lot bigger things to worry about than you know, who's scheduling the boathouse. But the DCA, they let this happen. Disgraceful. Yeah, why? Let's think about this. We'll be back in a few minutes. Why should a boathouse have anything to do with boats when it can be a frat house and it can be whatever you want it to be? Your party house, the Marty party house. I mean, what? Why would a boathouse be used as a boathouse? That doesn't make any sense, does it? Do we have to actually enter Bizarro World and pretend that it's real, that it's legitimate? Let's see. Is boat in the name? Are we burying the lead?
Hurley in the morning. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins this afternoon at 1. Now, Harry Hurley on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
It is 51, almost 52 minutes past the hour, flying by. Kirk Conover coming up at 7, Chuck Malamut at 8, Dr. Newkirk for half of the 9 o'clock hour, and then we'll reconvene with some open forum in the final half of the final hour of today's program. I was very saddened to learn that Benjamin Hall, one of the great Fox News military correspondents, wartime correspondents, and I'm very concerned because it's so sketchy what is being said. He is hospitalized. He has suffered an injury, and that's all that we know. You would think there would be a way to know more, and maybe they do, and just that's all they're saying for now. Because of my fill-in work with Fox News Radio and that week where I think I did 6 3-hour programs in a span of 4 or so days, and it was right when the war began. Again, my timing with the national work that I do is beyond comprehension. Multiple times there have been Supreme Court vacancies. This war, I mean, every single time I work, something incredibly major is happening. And it's such an opportunity. And I do everything I can to try to do a good job and not squander the opportunity, and to do a good job for the people who are trusting us to fill in for them. But I interviewed Benjamin Hall. I've interviewed Trey Yingst and all of them. Harrington, and he's back now. I know I'm leaving out a couple. And every time I would talk with them, I would end with, you know, to be safe, because it's so dangerous. Putin is bombing anywhere at any time. He's bombing right up to the border of Poland. And you had Benjamin Hall right near Kyiv. So, quote unquote, we have a minimal level of details right now, but Ben is hospitalized and our teams on the ground are working to gather additional information as the situation quickly unfolds, Fox News President and Chief Executive Officer Suzanne Scott wrote in a memo to all employees. Quote, the safety of our entire team of journalists in Ukraine and the surrounding regions is our top priority, and of the utmost importance. This is, quote, a stark reminder for all journalists who are putting their lives on the line every day to deliver the news from a war zone. Please keep Ben and his family in your prayers. Perfect. Perfect comments. Here's some good news. Because all we have is bad news these days, it seems. I like good news. Senator Joe Manchin is not supporting the nomination of Sarah Bloom Raskin to a key position on the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors, which really means that unless somebody like Mitt Romney or some jackass on the Republican side were to give them the 50th vote, this nomination is going down in defeat. Very, very radical. And of course, you know that because that's all Biden does. Biden is completely run by the woke, broke, hard left. Every nomination is a whack job. Quote, her previous public statements have failed to satisfactorily address my concerns about the critical importance of financing and all of the above energy policy to meet our nation's critical energy needs, Senator Manchin said, quote, I've come to the conclusion that I am unable to support her nomination. Now, of course, Jen Psaki, because this is opposite world, says, quote, Raskin is one of the most qualified individuals to ever be nominated to this position. Yeah? Yeah? That's what you say. And everything you say, I find to be wanting. Here's some more good news. 49 GOP senators say they will not back the new Iran nuclear deal. Now, before you wonder who's the 50th, the 50th is Rand Paul. And I'm not worried about him. He's a fair guy. He simply said it's too soon to condemn a deal that is not yet formulated. He said it's akin to condemning diplomacy itself. It's not a very thoughtful position. So you wait. You wait till you have the deal, then you vote it down because it's going to be a bad deal. And of course, they're going to lie and they're going to have side deals that we don't know about. And think about it. What could possibly go wrong? We have the Russians negotiating for us. Yes, it's that sick. On one hand, it's a war criminal and you can't do any business with them whatsoever. And on the other, they're negotiating directly in the room with Iran. Now, understand something. If Iran and Russia and others like that, if they are going to sign this thing, that ought to be everything you need to know that we should not. Because anything like that other hideous deal that Obama and Biden did with Hillary, awful. And they're at it again. Thank God this got stopped. This came very close to being approved last week. Thank goodness. The 2015 Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act, acronym INERA, gives Congress the right to review an agreement. It does say, though, lawmakers are unlikely to be able to kill a deal outright after failing to do so in 2015. Democrats now hold slim majorities in both the House of Representatives and the Senate and are unlikely to turn against Biden in sufficient numbers to stop a major initiative like an Iran deal. It will be a terrible deal, and they will brag. This will be considered a major accomplishment. Unbelievable times. Dangerous times that we are living in. What I didn't get to, and I really wanted to, I think we'll talk about this with Kirk Conover coming up in a few minutes. Maybe I'll lead with this. Liz Cheney is looking to Democrats to help her. She's got this awful strategy of having Democrats and independents vote in the Republican primary this August 16th and then put her over the top. Then if she loses that, or even if she wins, then she's going to run for president probably in the general election, to try to help the Democrat win. Liz Cheney has to be politically, electorally stopped. We'll talk about this more right after the break. Don't go away. Kirk Conover this hour, Chuck Malamut in the 8 o'clock hour, Dr. Newkirk in the first half of the 9 o'clock hour. And a reminder, go check out my Stockton update on your app or the website.
WPGG Atlantic City, WENJ HD3 Millville, a Town Square Media station. Everything you need to know in 6 minutes starts now. From Harry Hurley Way in the World's Playground to the broadcast pioneers of Philadelphia Hall of Fame.
I want to congratulate my friend, Harry Hurley.
You're about to find out why Harry Hurley has been named to the Talkers Magazine list of the 100 most important talk show hosts in the nation. Live from the studios of Town Square Media in Northfield, it's Hurley in the Morning on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, thanks. Welcome back. It's 6 minutes past the hour. Chuck Malamud is here. This program is presented by Chuck Malamud, a financial advisor at Morgan Stanley. The information, views, and opinions expressed are those of Chuck Malamud and do not necessarily reflect those of Morgan Stanley or its affiliates. They are current as of the date of this broadcast. They are subject to change without notice. Neither the information provided nor any opinion expressed herein constitutes a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. This presentation is for informational purposes only. Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney, member SIPC. Chuck Malamut, welcome to your program.
Good morning, Harry. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. How about you?
Yeah, Harry, everything's wonderful. Baseball's back, which is a good thing.
And they're going to get the whole season in.
And by the way, Tom Brady's back.
And Tom Brady. I knew you were going to say it. Tom Brady is back. So, Pocket Kreskin. Called it.
So at least there's a few things that have gone right here, because certainly the world's been upside down, Harry. There's no doubt about it. And
by the way, the Wall Street Journal had a article that I didn't fully get to read yet, but I intend to. I've read about maybe a few hundred words of it. They have a working theory that Brady actually never really retired, that this was all a plan.
Could have been.
But he's right where he was. Some say the plan was he wanted to go to San Francisco. I would have thought if he wanted to go to San Francisco, I would think they would have been happy to have him. He grew up there. Came of age when Joe Montana was the Tom Brady of
right.
then. And there's just this sort of romance novel that he would love to win a Super Bowl with them.
That would be something, but yeah. I guess the good news is he's back. Tampa Bay's very happy, I'm sure.
And I'm sure that means they're going to actually they'll keep Gronk, who I think was going to leave. I don't see Gronkowski leaving, and they'll probably fill in a few more pieces.
So, Harry, that's the good news about sports.
And yes.
Let's kind of segue.
Go to the good news of what's happening.
The equity market. We'll talk a little bit about the financial world and. It'd be wonderful if we all kind of lived in Tom Brady's world, but unfortunately,
well, the high
not.
Gas prices brought Tom Brady back to work. He was retired till that.
So, Harry, let's start a little bit as we closed out last week, and we'll talk about yesterday. We'll talk about obviously today as well, and where we think we're going into the future. But you know, global equities again lower again last week. The S&P. Close at 42.04, Harry. That was a loss of almost 3% for the week. The Russell Mid Cap, was down about 2.7%. All the indices were down domestically and internationally, with the exception of the developed international markets, which is typically we refer to as the MSCI EAFE. And that was just up ever so slightly. So when you take a look year to date, as you can well imagine, all the indices are down. The Dow down 9% year to date. Mm. This is again before yesterday, but the Dow yesterday it was a non-event. So call it 9% year to date. S&P was down about 11.5% going in yesterday. So add in yesterday would put us over minus negative 12. The Nasdaq continues to now operating what they refer to as bear market territory. It was down 18%, Harry, going into the weekend, down 2% again yesterday, off of its all-time highs, down about 22% to 23%. You know, we've talked about, the emerging markets down, 12%, international, the developed markets down 12% year-to-date as well. And, you know, the one thing that we have focused on is the 10-year Treasury, because, as you know, rates continue to move higher. I mean, yesterday, the 10-year, I believe, was about 2.15%. It was a big move, pushing bond prices lower. So for the week, the 10-year Treasury was down. Harry, can you imagine down 2.3% for the week, just the week? And year-to-date down about 4%. And I think one of the things that we talked about, this could be two consecutive years where the bond market actually, you know, moves down in value. So, not great news. And when you look at what's happening here, I mean, it's all focused. I mean, you and Kirk talked about briefly, it's focused about, headlines are all about the war. Headlines are all about inflation. Headlines are all about rising food prices and rising, you know, wages as well. So, the big news this week, and we'll get into it today, the Fed meets today, and the Fed meets tomorrow.
Is this going to be it, right? The first rate increase is coming.
It's been telegraphed that, you know, they're coming with 25 basis points, but, you know, there's a lot of pundits that are saying, look, the Fed is way behind the curve here, and they're going to be increasing rates, you know, every meeting for the next 7 to 10 meetings.
So if they do 25 basis points over the next couple of days, that's built in. That would be a yawner. The markets won't even hiccup because of that. That's expected, correct?
That's correct, yes.
If they did something like 50 basis points, but we don't think they're going to do that. So,
well, I think Chairman Powell, and when he was at the in front of the Senate, he was on Capitol Hill last week or 2 weeks ago, and he telegraphed, 25 basis point move. Now, that doesn't, he is only the voice of the committee. But, you know, there's the Federal Reserve Board is made up of multiple Fed presidents. And maybe you're right, Harry. Maybe they come with something different, although I find it hard to believe that would happen.
I don't think so. I threw it out as just a flyer. I don't think so.
And then we have to really look at the language as far as, you know, the comments that he makes around 2:15 on Wednesday. As far as where we're going.
First break, we're going to come right back strong with Chuck Malamut. To reach Chuck for all of your financial planning needs, simple to do. Call 609-383-2010. Tell Chuck I sent you early in the morning. 609-383-2010 for all of your financial planning needs. Chuck Malamut returns. All About Your Financial Matters continues on the Early in the Morning program. Back after this.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Brian Kilmeade is next at 10. Now, back to Harry Hurley on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
We're back. It's approaching 18 minutes past the hour with Chuck Malamut talking all about your financial matters. Chuck, time is yours.
So, Harry, I'm going to pile on to what Kirk came with right at the end. It's all about inflation, and I guess, you know, when I kind of thought about it, you know, we're inflating our way to where, and I don't think it's in a good space. So, you think about.
Did you hear what Janet Yellen said?
Yeah, I
was very surprised she came out and did that, because she contradicted the administration. For those who don't know, and I only reported this once several days ago, the Secretary of the Treasury, former chair of the Federal Reserve Board, and I think she's a serious person. She said high inflation into next year.
But she also said soft landing. Now, okay. I'm not quite certain how you can go from one extreme to the other. But so, Harry, last week, another month, another 40-year high in the rate of our U.S. inflation, a 0.8% increase month over month. And that takes us to a 7.9% annual pace. Now, the one thing to look at, Harry, it was increases, you know, across the board, gasoline, rent, groceries, and more. The core CPI, which excludes energy and food, and I always try to figure, like, how do you, we always talk about this, how do you exclude food and energy? But in any case, when you do.
But I did learn that's in the core index.
That's a
not,
core.
Not in the CPI that
correct.
They report.
Now, the core was at,
it took me 30 years to learn that.
The core was up 0.5% to 6.4% year over year. So even, Harry, even if you go beyond gas and rent and groceries, you know, prices are rising across the board. The Labor Department said, you know, prices for airlines, car insurance, recreation, personal care, household furnishings are all, you know, contributing to this increase as well. And a lot of these categories, you know, and we've talked about this, we've seen the largest annual increase in prices ever. Your favorite food, chicken.
Yeah, thank you.
Baby food, car parts, lodging away from home, and that category obviously covers hotels. So when you look at the report, there's little in the report to suggest that the rapid pace of price increases could start to slow down soon, Harry. You know, given the impact of now the import or the ban on the imports that we have with Russian oil, Russian gas and energy. And that's sort of just starting to trickle through the economy. However, I'll take a sidebar here. I don't know if you've noticed the price of oil yesterday and again today down pretty significantly.
Is it under 100 or at 100?
It was under 100, you know, earlier this morning. So I'm thinking that, you know, you've had a big shakeout.
Now, I will say, Chuck, my corner, you know, hot gas station, down 10 cents.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things we kind of talked about is, you know, is it come down as fast as it goes up? So if you look at the price of West Texas, down 8% today, down $8. Brent down $7.50 or over 7%. So, you know,
just got a text, $95 right now.
Yeah. So, and think about it. We were here. It spiked to like 138 just a week ago. So, you know, I think that's a very, very dangerous game to play. You have to be very,
so,
very
so what is the reason why, other than they can do it, why if it comes down from 138 to 95, would the price at the pump only come down 10 cents off of like a dollar?
Well, Harry, I want to be of the belief that, you know, it's always fast to go on the upside and always slow to come down. It doesn't, you know, and it's something I just, you know, we have talked to friends and clients and associates, you know, you think about it, you know, a gas station takes delivery on a Tuesday. And they literally, the fuel is in the ground,
yeah,
paid for, and all of a sudden those prices start to move.
They raise it.
Now
I'm longing for the days when a barrel of oil was less than zero.
Well, that's not going to happen,
okay,
Harry. But these oil prices moving to the downside, you know, believe it or not, you know, the talks of a potential ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine, and again, the one thing we really haven't talked about.
Would a ceasefire, in your estimation, would that be, because Putin is not really to be trusted, but if we had a ceasefire, would that be a geopolitical event that markets would react to?
I think absolutely so, yes.
I do too. I mean,
and, you know, the other thing that's happening, we really haven't talked about it, is, you know, China basically shutting down, you know, for a week with you know.
They have the worst COVID outbreak in 2 years.
They have. So, you know,
and incidentally, that affects, I forget, it's Foxconn or something like that.
Foxconn, that's correct. And,
how do I know these?
And your favorite company, Apple.
Well, that's Foxconn. That's who makes the Apple in China, but they shut down. So that affects supply, doesn't it?
It does. And so let's go back a little bit to the inflation because we kind of got off track here. So, you know, in addition, you know, we talked about oil potentially coming down, in these imports stopping. Rent prices are going to keep headline inflation elevated, you know, for months. So we're kind of in a really tough spot right now.
Yeah. But by the way, oil prices aren't potentially coming down. They've come down sharply.
They've come down, but we look at where they were. I mean, you got to think about where we were before all this started.
I know, but
this
from 138 to 95 is...
But we were, think about it, we were in the 60s and the 70s. So we need to get back, to those levels. So, you know, the Fed is in a pickle right here, Harry. They are going to obviously raise rates. They're going to get to their goal of 2% inflation. I'm not sure how they get there. I mean, you have to really, really...
They're going to create pain to get there.
Yeah, your rates are going to go up. And, you know, I've seen some strategists saying that rates are going to go up, you know, seven to ten times. So the other thing to think about is the consumer and discretionary spending. If you continue with these high food prices and high oil prices at the pump, you know, consumer discretionary spending, you know, could come down pretty significantly. And that would be a headwind for the economy, because we talked about just last week, the consumer, Harry, represents more than 2/3.
And consumer confidence right now is not good.
No, and we'll get to that in a little bit later in our discussion today. So, you know, the question is, and as I mentioned as we started this topic, and, you know, inflating our way to where? And quite frankly, Harry, I'm not sure, because, you know, consumer sentiment, and I'll just kind of, you know, we'll kind of roll right into consumer sentiment right now. You know, the February CPI report that we talked about, fastest pace in 40 years, surging energy prices, and that's all taking a toll on the consumer. The most recent University of Michigan's survey showed the sentiment falling to 59.7, Harry, in the early weeks of March. It's the lowest level that we've seen since 2011. And consumers, you know, their one-year inflation expectation, Harry, rose to 5.4% from 4.9%. Again, the highest level we've seen since the 1980s. So consumer sentiment is really viewed as a key driver with respect to consumer spending. You know, consumers hold back. And, you know, are they going to, you know, you think about it, you know, the pedal to the metal, just buy, spend, whatever you can do, whatever you get your hands on.
Well, wages are not keeping up with inflation right now.
Wages are moving higher, but they're not keeping up with inflation. That's absolutely correct. So I think that...
Doesn't that make people spend less?
It spends less. And, you know, Harry, if you take a look right now with the record fuel prices and the toll they're taking on the consumer... The estimate is that if the current fuel prices were sustained, that could add over $1,000 a year, Harry, in annual expenses for the average household.
Gee, I thought it was much more. I thought it was like $5,000. So that's less than I thought.
You think about the average wages earned in this country. You know, that takes a big bite.
Yeah. No. Agreed. Totally agree. Which begs the question, I don't know how this would be possible, but can we avoid an economic slowdown?
Well, we've delivered a lot of, I don't want to say not such great news so far this morning, but in the U.S. could avoid a significant economic slowdown, because the one thing that we're so laser focused on the price of fuel, okay? But remember, back in 1980,
I remember.
You know, that was where, you know, even odd license plates, and I mean, I remember people changing license plates.
So do I.
To get to the pump, but you know, at that point in time, gasoline represented about 6.5% of the consumer's wallet in that 1980 energy crisis. When we had the issue in 2008, it was about 4.5% of the wallet, and then right now we're about 3%. So the good news is that even as prices have gone higher, we hopefully won't end up, and we'll talk about that big R word, you know, a little bit later in today's discussion.
Let's get the bottom of the hour break in. We're going to come back strong with Chuck Malamut. A reminder, you could win $1 million with a perfect college basketball bracket in the $1 million bracket challenge on the WPG Talk Radio app. Sign in and pick your teams now. The $1 million bracket challenge is made possible by Progressive Fence and Rail. Privacy, protection, perfection. ProgressiveFenceAndRail.com. Sign up and pick your teams now on the WPG Talk Radio app. And a reminder, visit the WPG Talk Radio app for your chance to win $100 worth of New Jersey lottery tickets. right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. Back with Chuck Malamut in just a moment.
This is the Town Square, New Jersey Info and Weather Network.
And this is Harry Hurley at 30 minutes past the hour with three stories that you can follow right now on the WPG Talk Radio app. The reason why Stockton University was booted from the Atlantic City Boathouse. We've got it. It's on your app. Don Purdy, former mayor of Galloway Township, challenging Keith Davis for Atlanta County Republican Party chairman. And John Devlin, Dateline Atlantic City, has filed a $10 million tort claims notice against the city.
From the Town Square, New Jersey Info and Weather Network, I'm Chief Meteorologist Dan Zarrow. No reason to beware this Ides of March forecast. Weather looks great today with spring-like warmth across South Jersey. We'll alternate periods of sunshine and fair weather clouds, high temperature reaching for 64, more than 10 degrees above normal for the middle of March. Clear and quiet tonight, low of 45, mostly sunny and mild tomorrow, high of 60, although much cooler right along the coast. Get weather 24/7 wherever you are. Download our free mobile app today.
Early in the morning, WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. From the world's playground, this is Early in the Morning on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
We're back. It's 36 minutes past the hour. Chuck Malamud continues all about your financial matters. Chuck, time is yours.
So, Harry, I think we've kind of have talked around it, but I think maybe what we'll do is talk a little about the war and the impact, what we're going through right now. And really, there hasn't been a lot of attention with respect to our U.S. dollar. So, you know, the war is, in fact, boosting our dollar because it is a safe haven flow for assets, you know, in times of trouble like we are now. And as a result of that, you know, while the dollar could be somewhat stretched, it's likely to remain strong until this crisis the crisis ends up subsiding. Now the question is, you know, who knows when and where to what capacity? Because apparently they're again talking. But you know, Harry, I think we have kind of lost track as to to the war itself and what the impact is. Obviously the market reactions outside of Russia, you know, initially were moderate, but now, Harry, they've become a lot more significant. And in the natural gas impact in Europe is obviously a major concern. You know, if you take a look at Russia, outside of commodities, Russia is really a marginal player in the global economy. You know, Europe sends only 1-3% of its exports to Russia at this point in time. You know, unlike China, you know, Russia has a minimal role in global supply chains. It accounts for 0.1%, 0.1%, so 0.1% of the S&P 500 earnings. The U.S. and
yet they account for almost 40% of all natural gas in Europe.
Correct. So, you know, the U.S. and the global economy have had really strong momentum going into the crisis. You know, the 2022 GDP number was about 3.7%, and the world was actually over 4%. You know, Europe is obviously more exposed since 40% of the natural gas comes from Russia. And, I don't know. Are they too big to sanction? You know, in totality, and
it's a smart comment.
And you know, your favorite topic. You know, we are and should be energy independent. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it.
We were a net oil exporter.
So, you know, having said that, it's just really, you know, you look at the prices, and the good news is they're coming down. But you know, quite frankly, Harry, I don't think they really should have ever gotten near to begin with.
Agreed.
So when you look at the impact, you know, of the war itself, I think it'd be rather foolish for us to kind of handicap, you know, the outcome. But it's probably I think a pretty good bet here, Harry, is that it will be a negotiated settlement. Hopefully before there's too much more damage that's being done, you know, to the global economy.
But can the world allow Vladimir Putin to be a legitimate world leader and function?
I heard you earlier this morning. I don't think that's going to happen.
So what happens to Russia? He's got to go.
He's going to have to go.
By the way, the United States government charged a Russian oligarch yesterday with illegal campaign financing. I think they're dropping the hammer on these oligarchs.
Well, they should.
I agree.
They should, Harry. And you know, when you look at...
But if they do, then don't they drop the hammer on Putin?
I think that's what happens. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, what do they call last man standing at
the end of the day? Yeah, it's like, we're fine with what you're doing until it affects us.
So, you know, we're kind of in the middle of the equity markets on a day-to-day basis. It seems like every day the market goes down.
Yeah.
I guess it was just the other day. I'm trying to remember what day it was. Maybe Friday? Early in the morning, Putin made a one line comment saying, "Look, we're making progress."
Yeah,
and the futures where the Dow futures were plus 50 at the time, they went to plus 400 almost immediately, and then at the end of the day, because it was a weekend and nothing was added into that comment, those gains were given up.
Futures are up today, right?
They're up today, but you go through these every day, Harry. You open higher, and then you have this. Ongoing selling into the market.
And how big of an impact? I mean, obviously, gas prices were going up. Energy was costing more. We were importing. We were not, self-sufficient anymore and all this. There were a lot of bad things going on prior to Russia-Ukraine. How much has Russia-Ukraine war affected things?
I think psychologically, it's taken a big toll on the markets.
I agree.
I mean, because the market's sitting, we've always talked about geopolitical events, and
it's a big one
that we just can't get out of the way of it. It's everywhere, and it's unfortunate. Look, I mean, can you imagine in your lifetime that you would be watching tanks roll into a city?
I mean, it looks like the beginning of what got us into world wars.
Correct,
and that's why it has to be stopped.
So if and it will happen. They come to some sort of, ceasefire. I would think, and the world seems to believe that equity markets are going to be higher, before we get to the end of the year, pretty significantly. Although our chief strategist Mike Wilson, who's pretty dour on the markets, actually yesterday, Harry, said he was in favor of buying fixed income.
Wow,
which is really a sort of a role reversal.
Yeah, take his temperature.
Yeah, and I, Mike and I listened and said, did we just hear this correctly? And that's what he said. But I think at the end of the day, I think equity markets will in fact be higher as we get to the end of the year.
We don't have a COVID tracker, but we have a COVID reminder.
Yeah, Harry. I mean, I think this took everybody by surprise. I mean, who would ever imagine the days of the lockdowns in our country were, they're over. Even, Omicron caused record case counts early in the year. U.S. investors looked beyond the headlines. Now, there was really no political appetite and no scientific support to basically, look for a new shutdown, which we didn't have, which meant COVID was no longer a material risk to the markets. However, 2 years to 2 years to the day, almost for the most part. It's sort of a tale of two pandemics. Cases, were surging in the U.S. and cases were surging in Europe. China at the time had their zero COVID approach. That seemed to work.
And they still do now.
And now what's happening is that, unfortunately, their numbers are moving, significantly higher. They've shut down for the, some cities for the better part of a week. That's obviously had an impact on the supply chain. As you mentioned, Apple and Foxconn, earlier today. And that's one of the other reasons that the price of oil is coming down as well, because there's not as much use right now in China because people are not going out. So I think the one thing we have to think about, we've always talked about, how fragile the supply chain is. So It only takes one missing link in the supply chain to hold up the shipment of an end product. And if these new COVID challenges continue, in China, it could result in additional challenges, not only in China, but also you know, internationally as well in manufacturing, supplying, you know, the end products for the consumer.
Very important update. We continue with Chuck Malamut, all about your financial matters right after this. 609-383-2010 to reach Chuck. 609-383-2010. Comprehensive full financial services at your service with Chuck Malamut and the Malamut Group. 609-383-2010. 609-383-2010 with Chuck Malamut. This is
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. Serving South Jersey for 81 years at 1450 AM. This is WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Thank you. Welcome back. 50 minutes, 10 minutes before the top of the hour, 50 minutes past the hour. We covered oil. We covered the price at the pump to your satisfaction, Chuck.
We did, Harry. The only thing I'd like to add is that, you know, from March the 8th, the one thing to note is that oil prices as of, you know, right now are down about 25%, $95.75 a barrel. So, and I do think, Harry, that will end up, you know, be reflective at the price of the pump because, you know, it was just the other day that we ended up putting in the national average. I mean, I look at this and I look three, four times. Can you believe the national average for a gallon of gas this past Friday hit a record $4.33?
Yes.
Now, the one thing that we did talk about with CPI, and I think that we have to be careful of here, is that these increased gas prices, and maybe they'll come down as fast as they moved up, or maybe a little bit slower, perhaps. Those increased gas prices are going to be, you know, noted in the next CPI release. But you know, I think investor confidence right now, Harry, you know, I don't think they're waiting for the next CPI report. I think we clearly know where investor confidence is at this point in time with respect to the price of the pump. So hopefully, you know, this too shall pass and you know, clearer heads will be out there. And, you know, the futures right now, the good news is for today, at least as we look to get started, are pretty significantly.
Chuck, I want to skip to the last item, and then I think we'll have time to still cover some of the other ones on your list, because I think this is very important for many students and many parents that are listening. Student loans and Parent Plus loans, supposedly payments resume as of May 1st. This forbearance has gone on for a long time and keeps being extended. I heard out of the president's own mouth, he's contemplating extending it again. I think based on the economy as it is right now and the high gas prices and everything, I think this is going to be extended again.
Might, yeah, I'd say maybe 2-3 weeks ago, it'd probably be a different story.
Agreed.
But, you know, as you mentioned, federal student loan payments are currently set to resume in May. You know, that this pause has been out there for, you know, for quite some time, you know, due to the pandemic.
Has it been 2 years or less?
It's been a year plus.
Yes.
But, you know, borrowers might not be ready. You know, think about it. You've gotten accustomed to making your payments on certain other goods and services and discretionary items and vacations and all. You say, well, I don't need to make my student loan payments. And, you know, the delinquency rates, Harry, what's projected, let's assume that this does restart. I mean,
yeah.
you might be 100% correct with respect to what Biden is, you know, floating out there and thinking about, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a lot different now than it was where we just, you know.
I think he's going to kick it three more months down the summer lane. I can't see how you would start that up again based on the inflation that the American people are experiencing. And see, you have this mindset now where extraordinary things are possible. I mean, this would always just be due, and if you didn't pay it, you'd be in default. And you can, as you know, you cannot discharge this type of debt, federal
debt.
No,
so Harry, you know, there's some thoughts out there that the delinquency rates for these student loans, you know, could snap back from the historical lows that are obviously in place right now to the previous highs, which were in excess of 10%.
Yeah, I think so.
When that debt was past due,
they don't even consider you past due. They don't report you past due until beyond 90 days. You can be quite late with them.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, you know, every person that has a student loan will be affected, but unfortunately, the low income workers will be impacted
more. Of course, and I'll tell you what, it was a shame. If folks could have really buckled down, it's been more than 18 months. I think it's close to 2 years. If with no interest, you would have just been taking dollars right off the principal. It was a great opportunity to pay it down.
It was, and unfortunately, Harry, I think most people directed those resources to something else.
You absolutely.
Know, vacation, vehicles.
Yep.
Home repairs.
Yeah.
I mean,
the list
goes on and on. But now, I mean, the clock will start ticking at some point in time. And I have a tendency. I agree with you. I think that I don't think Biden has any appetite to restart this. Because think about it. That's May.
Oh yeah.
And after May comes June.
Right.
And after June comes July.
Right.
And then, listen,
if they kick it 3 more months, then it's going to get extended again because there's no way he's going to make these big payments be due at the time of the November election.
Exactly.
So this is exactly. There's if this gets extended one more time, it's almost guaranteed that you will have until the end of the year.
Yeah, and maybe yeah, exactly. Maybe into, you know, 23 and then some. But so now it's the Ides of March today, correct?
Yes, beware.
And tomorrow is the 16th.
Yes, and the day after that is St. Patty's Day.
And
I'll be wearing green.
Of course you will.
On Thursday,
yes. I would expect nothing but
Thank you.
But the Fed at 2:15 tomorrow, I'm sorry, no, at 2 o'clock,
yeah,
I believe.
Just call it. It's, you know, 25 basis points.
They make the announcement.
Yeah, they're going to raise rates.
You know, there's probably going to be 5 or 6 more rate hikes this year. Followed by another 3 to 4 in 2023.
So then we're talking about getting close to 2% at that point.
Actually, 2.625%.
There you go.
You know, if everything falls into line as strategists and analysts are anticipating. So
that would probably take like a mortgage rate to like 6%, 5.5%?
I don't think so, Harry, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, oftentimes doesn't happen.
Doesn't go.
The long end of the curve doesn't get impacted as much as it does on the short end of the curve.
How much do you think interest rates will go up? More than 1%, right?
You know, Harry, look, that's, yeah, more than 1%. I mean, I think at the end
more
of the day.
More than 1, less than 2?
I think that's anybody's guess. But let's take a look back. You know, we'll kind of take a walk back in memory lane here. And we go back to, say, 2016 and 2018, that 2-year period of time, Harry, the Fed raised short-term interest rates 8 times, each time a 25 basis point increase for a total of, you know, 2%, 2 percentage points, we'll call it. Over that same 2-year period, the yield on the 10-year Treasury, Harry, only rose from 2.54 to 2.77%. So this is all impacting the short end of the curve. You know, overnight money, prime rate, consumers, having money in money market funds. And now, so we have to be very, very careful of where we're going with respect to, you know, the short end of the curve versus the long end of the curve. And I think there's a whole lot to be said about that. And I think finally what we'll end up is, let's talk a little bit here, Harry, about, stocks and inflation. I think we'll kind of end on that note if it's okay with you.
Of course it is. It's your show. 30 seconds.
We've had 8 years up and, you know, we've had the 16 highest years of inflation over the last 100 years. We've had 8 up years. We've had 8 down years in the market, and the average return in the equity markets over that time period is about 5.5% per year. So, with that being said, I mean, we covered
that was interesting. What you
we
just
covered
said.
A lot yeah. today, and a lot of the news wasn't terribly positive. But you know, we're in a tough spot right now. But I think again, you know, this separates investors from traders. And again, you know, always keep your eye on the ball. Try to stay long term focused. And this, too, shall work out. It always has in the past.
Excellent presentation, Chuck Malamud, 609-383-2010. to reach Chuck Malamud for all of your financial planning needs. Dr. Newkirk for the next half hour.
WPGG Atlantic City, WENJ HD3 Millville, a Town Square Media station. Everything you need to know in 6 minutes starts now.